And he says to us, "Don't say that I will depart tomorrow. Even today I am still arriving. Look deeply. Every second I am arriving, to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird with still fragile wings, learning to sing in my new nest, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive in order to laugh and cry, to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that is alive. I am the mayfly, metamorphosing on the surface of the river, and I am the bird that swoops down to swallow the mayfly. I am the frog, swimming happily in the clear water of a pond, and I am the grass snake that silently feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks. And I am the arms merchant, selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo with plenty of power in my hands. And I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom all over the earth. My pain is like a river of tears, so vast it fills the four oceans. Please call me by my true names, so that I can hear all my cries and my laughter at once, so I can see that my joy and my pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up, and so the door of my heart can be left open, the door of compassion." So, the story of the creation of that poem is relevant to us today, and so I will read it. This is, again, from Thich Nhat Hanh. After the Vietnam War, many people wrote to us in Plum Village. We received hundreds of letters each week from the refugee camps in Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, and the Philippines, hundreds each week. It was very painful to read them, but we had to be in contact. We tried our best to help, but the suffering was enormous, and sometimes we were discouraged. It is said that half the boat people fleeing Vietnam died in the ocean. Only half arrived at the shores of Southeast Asia. There were many young girls, boat people, who were raped by sea pirates. Even though the United Nations and many countries tried to help the government of Thailand prevent that kind of piracy, sea pirates continued to inflict much suffering on the refugees. One day we received a letter telling us about a young girl on a small boat who was raped by a Thai pirate. She was only 12, and she jumped into the ocean and drowned herself. When you first learn something like that, you get angry at the pirate. You naturally take the side of the girl. As you look more deeply, you will see it differently. If you take the side of the little girl, then it is easy. You only have to take a gun and shoot the pirate. But we can't do that. In my meditation, I saw that if I had been born in the village of the pirate and raised in the same conditions as he was, I would now be the pirate. there's a great likelihood that I would have become a pirate. I cannot condemn myself so easily. In my meditation, I saw that many babies are born along the Gulf of Siam, hundreds every day. And if we educators, social workers, politicians, and others do not do something about the situation in 25 years, a number of them will also become sea pirates. That is certain. If you or I were born today in those fishing villages, we might become sea pirates. If you take a gun and shoot the pirate, you shoot all of us. Because all of us are to some extent responsible for the state of affairs. And so after a long meditation, I wrote this poem. In it, there are three people: the 12-year-old girl, the pirate, and me. Can we look at each other and recognize ourselves in each other? The title of the poem is "Please Call Me By My True Names," because I have so many names, and when I hear any one of these names, I have to say yes. So, for folks who pay attention to their dreams, some folks pay a lot of attention to their dreams, and they have questions about their dreams, it is a pretty common practice to regard all of the characters and all of the objects in the dreams as oneself. Have we heard that before? That idea? I was dreaming that I was playing cards with a bear wearing a suit of armor in my dad's house, right? And the person will say, oh, okay, well, that's, so in the dream, that you're you, and you're the cards, and you're your dad's house, and you're the bear, and you're the armor, right? All those things in the dream are you. And so as you're playing with this dream and trying to figure out what meaning it might hold for you, just ask yourself, what parts of me are being represented by all that stuff, right? And that makes a lot of sense because, of course, this person's dreaming. Obviously, everything that shows up in their dream is them. Well, I mean, of course, they're the dreamer. It's all you, kiddo. Right? That makes sense. It's kind of cool, right? And I was thinking this morning, as we were sitting Zazen together, some of the toes on my left foot started falling asleep. I'm guessing that's happened to more than one person in this room before. And I started thinking, you know, I can't feel those. I can pinch them like this, but I can't feel it. Is that still me? It's a silly question. Of course it's still me. But I can't feel it. So when you hurt, if I can't feel it, it's pretty easy for me to think, you aren't me. You must be other. It puts you in a different category of my concern, doesn't it? It's interesting a little bit to play with this kind of stuff, isn't it? When we look really closely, like Thich Nhat Hanh advises us to, we start seeing these lines are very blurry, almost arbitrary. The things we include in our circle of self, our circle of caring and concern, the things we allow ourselves to feel, and the things we don't include, don't wanna. What's not lost on me about this poem when I first read it was how troubling it was to me. I read this a long, long time ago, and I went, oh, that's interesting, he's a really famous guy. That poem doesn't really speak to me. It wasn't Zen enough for me. It was like 20 years ago. I don't know. It didn't mention emptiness, and it didn't say anything weird. It didn't have any Japanese in it. It just didn't. It just didn't sound like, you know, it wasn't Zen enough for me. Ah, I'm not sure about that guy. Maybe he's not the real deal. How dare you use everyday language? Plus, some of that stuff almost sounded political, didn't it? That's not Zen enough for me. No, thank you. I'm interested in the eternal. I realize now, probably 20 some years after I read that poem, the reason I didn't like it is because Thich Nhat Hanh is a master. That's not a word I like. It's not a word I use very often. But Thich Nhat Hanh was a master. And he said his pain was like a river of tears so vast that it filled the four oceans. So I can see why I turned away from this poem 20 years ago. It's like, this is an enlightened being, and you're telling me your pain is so big it fills all the oceans. So either I'm misunderstanding what enlightenment is, there is no other option. I was misunderstanding what enlightenment was. I was also aware of something else that he did when he was explaining the poem that I didn't care for at that time. And that was, he said, during my meditation, did you hear that? Like three different times. He said, during his meditation. And then what he described doing was using his imagination. That's not Zazen. What would Dogen say? Right? Sit and imagine. I wonder what would motivate that pirate. I wonder how he felt. I wonder how that was for him. It sounds like he was in hell. He was. I wonder how it was for that girl. I wonder how that was. It sounds like she was in hell. She was. He's using his imagination during his sitting to help crack open the door of his heart, because he recognizes, in his wisdom, I have put up a boundary between me and you, between me and your pain. And I'm telling myself it's not my pain. So he's using his imagination to start to massage the muscles of empathy, and then eventually maybe even compassion, so that he is willing and able to actually feel in him the hell of the little girl and the pirate. And then those three characters can indeed all become him. Do you see how intentional that has to be? That's really intentional. That's powerful practice. I can see why I turned away from it, because it wasn't shikantaza, and it wasn't the way Fukan Zazengi describes we're supposed to do the thing. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? I can see why I pushed that away. Of course I pushed it away. I was also a lot younger, right? And I had the same reaction to those stories that he described. He listed all of my defenses. We read the story, we get angry at the pirate, we want to get a gun, we shoot the pirate, problem solved. Sounds like a movie. In fact, I've seen that movie. I've seen that movie 50,000 times, so have you. First part of the movie, create somebody who's irredeemable. Second part of the movie, kill him. Feels good. Until you pay attention and realize it doesn't. It doesn't feel good. It's actually not satisfying. It's like eating a plate of Twinkies for dinner. Mm-mm-mm. Feels good. Until you realize, no, it doesn't. Nothing happened. My mouth is just distracted for a few minutes. I've been given nothing. I've been given nothing. I didn't learn anything. I didn't grow. I didn't see anything. I actually wasn't entertained. I was manipulated into feeling scared. And then I was manipulated into thinking, if I kill the thing that scares me, my fear goes away. Wow. We love this story. This is the human story. You see it all the time. I'm not telling anything you don't know. So I love that he names it, that it showed up in his mind to Thich Nhat Hanh. How tempting it is to just go there. Wouldn't that be easy? I can just objectify this other and say, you are the hero. I will identify myself with you. And then I'll objectify the other and say, you are the villain. And then I just push you down and pull you up. I hope you can hear as we're talking about this. I know I'm the one who's talking, but you're following along. I hope you can hear how thin that narrative actually is. I hope you're aware of the part of you that's aware right now that isn't actually satisfying. It isn't satisfying because Busho is saying it. It's got nothing to do with me. He is describing a very human experience. That's why I like this piece so much. I think that's why I resisted it for so long. It's a piece being written by a human about other humans. I don't get the sense that he is some lofty... Do you feel it? That's why I had to slowly redefine what enlightenment actually was. And in this case, the enlightenment is, I will see all of it as me. I will feel all of it as me. I will meet all of it with understanding and compassion. It's me. No more games. That's pretty hard. But can you feel how beautiful that is? Actual healing can come from that kind of insight, from that depth of practice. Something can actually change. Wow. And it has to start right here in the center of this beautiful man's chest, in the center of your beautiful chest. So, this is the voice of an enlightened being saying that he has no problem finding himself inside, he has no problem finding inside himself a girl who commits suicide out of wrenching shame and despair. That's part of his being, his enlightened being, right? This is the voice of an enlightened being saying he has no problem finding inside himself a pirate who rapes out of greed and anger. He is able to see it, feel it, and hold it all inside of himself directly without gap. This is not an idea of compassion. This is direct contact with tremendous violence and suffering, all being held with deep understanding, acceptance, and great love. This is Buddha, seeing and meeting the three poisons directly inside himself in his meditation, transforming their destructive potential for the outside external world with his mindful and wakeful gaze. Before we go any further, I'll remind you, I'm not talking about Thich Nhat Hanh. I'm talking about you. Because all of you have done this. To some degree, at some capacity, at some time, for some reason, all of you have done this. Everyone has done this. This is a human experience. It's why we come to rooms like this, because we recognize we have the potential to do that, and we want to come to places like this to be reminded of that, to be sustained in that, to be strengthened in that, to find community and other practitioners who are willing to cultivate that quality that you know you already have. So please don't do the thing he's describing, which is go, the other is Thich Nhat Hanh, and he is capable of amazing things, but I'm going to sit over here and na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Do you see it? No, pull it in. That's you. How do we know that's you? Because you recognize it. If you didn't recognize it, it wouldn't be you. Couldn't be. When we describe this and you go, oh yeah, I get it. There it is. If you didn't have a taste of that quality, you wouldn't be able to recognize it, right? Game recognize game. Does that make sense? Kinda? Okay. Pema Chodron, whatever happens, our commitment is to use it to awaken our heart. All activities should be done with one intention, to realize our connection with all beings. She said the same thing. That's a little bit easier to digest. I had no problem going, ooh, yeah, that's good Buddhism right there. I definitely want to be like, she didn't go into any of the details that I found very uncomfortable. That was a little safer for me. But I'm going to read that again, because everything that he said in that poem, everything is included in what she just said. It's exactly the same thing. Whatever happens. So before I go further, that's you scrolling through the news feed this morning. All of it's you. Every character in the news feed is you. That's the deal. Whatever happens, you get to use that. As she says, our commitment is to use it to awaken our heart. So that means when I'm reading my news feed, I'm doing it much, much less with this organ, a secondary organ, an important organ, a good organ, a friend. I'm doing it much more with this organ, primary organ. Going, ooh, I'm doing the thumb gesture. This is me scrolling. This is international sign language for scrolling. Oh, sadness. Ooh, hope. Oh, despair. Oh, anger. I don't know. I don't care. Boring. I don't know. I don't even understand. There's a country called that? Boring. Ouch. Angry. Can you feel it? I mean, go through your newsfeed. Take 30 seconds to just notice how many emotions you can write down and name if you're paying attention to the organ that's resonating. And then to start relating to that. All of it's me. All of it's me. Every hero, every villain. All the hope, all the violence. Basic Buddhism. Our commitment is to use it to awaken our heart, Pema says. All activity should be done with one intention. To realize our connection with all beings. Okay, and now after making fun of Dogen, I'll bring him back in again. Please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not be suspicious of the true dragon. Devote your energies to a way that directly indicates reality. Reality is capitalized in the translation I have in front of me. I don't know. But it would seem to me that reality would certainly include pirates and everything on your newsfeed. Reality would certainly include all your feelings about what's in your newsfeed and your thoughts. Reality would certainly include our tendency, our universal tendency to objectify. You don't have to shame yourself when you catch yourself doing it. It's what we're hardwired to do. But Dogen is our guy. And this is part of his description of what it is we're supposed to be doing on that cushion. Don't be suspicious of the true dragon. Now, I would have loved this 20 years ago because that sounds like Zen to me, baby. Oh, dragons and elephants, that's so much cooler. But when the dragon shows up as my heart is breaking because I'm so angry at the pirate and I'm so grief-stricken about the girl and I'm being asked to identify as both of them and I don't know what to do with that, and that's the dragon? No, I'm not interested anymore in the dragon. I'll take something else. Thank you very much. Devote your energies to a way that directly indicates reality is exactly like Pema saying, whatever happens, use it to awaken your heart and realize your connection to all beings is exactly the same as Thich Nhat Hanh saying, call me by my true names. All of it's me. Reality is me. I am reality. Do you see how that includes you? I hope you can see that we're not talking about Dogen, and we're not talking about Pema, and we're not talking about Thich Nhat Hanh. This is you. This is all of us. I appreciate being able to be in a space where I'm not being argued with when I say stuff like this. Can you imagine saying this at Thanksgiving dinner? Oh, I read this story how this horrible pirate, you know, raped this girl and she jumped into the ocean and killed herself out of shame. I'm both of those people. Pass the beans. I don't know about your family. That would not go over super well in mine. So I'm actually very sincere when I say that. Because this is a place, a room, an organization, a collection of people who are very devoted to awakening and seeing what they hadn't seen before, regardless of how that feels. That is a quality we call courage. And it's contagious. I feel braver when I'm in this place, oftentimes. A place that invites me to hold my grief with some reverence, to include it, to investigate it. To be in a place that encourages me to hold my anger and my judgment and my greed. And a place that reminds me, you're vast. You have plenty of space for all those things. It's okay. You have infinite space, actually, to hold those things. You can include them without a problem, even if it hurts. even if it hurts. It's still not a problem. It's okay. You can include those things. Can you feel the size of that, kind of? And it starts feeling a little bit more like a dragon to me. It's very, very, very big who we really are. So it's okay. You actually can include the pirate. Oh, yeah, there you are. I see that you're here. I understand that part. That's okay. I know that my toe is still part of me. Even if I can't feel it, I can still stroke it until it wakes back up again. Yeah, I can do that here. We vow to honor the suffering of the whole world. And thus I will care for my own suffering, for I am no different. I will participate in the healing. I will bring compassion. I will see clearly my own violence. Who is going to love the perpetrator if I do not? Destruction exists in the world because destruction exists within us. To study the way is to study the self. In Zazen, we make our whole self an organ of clear awareness. Clear awareness doesn't pick and choose. We hear that a lot in Zen. Pick and choose is a phrase we hear a lot in Zen. It's a good phrase, I like it. I don't know what it originally was and how it was translated into the English phrase pick and choose, but it's the tendency that Thich Nhat Hanh was reminding us of I am this and not that, I am this and not that, more of this, less of that. Pick and choose, it's just a human tendency, right? We don't need to criticize it, we just need to recognize we have pattern creating and pattern recognition machines up here that we imagine that we are, and that's its job, is to find patterns. Right, and then to assign values, and then to place ourselves in relationship with those things as ego extensions. All that sounds very complicated. It's just a way of saying, like it, it's me. Don't like it, it's not me. You know your team when they lose, and somebody says, your team sucks, and you get angry? Why? Your friend didn't say, you suck. Your friend said, your team sucks. They do. They got killed. They were terrible out there. They're running around like they'd never had legs before. But, because no, they're, can you feel it? They're part of me. Come on. So the invitation is just to notice that. Just to notice that. And to notice how arbitrary it is. And that it's always related to a feeling. It's always related to a feeling. Isn't that interesting? The people I imagine I don't like, I have a feeling in me when I think about them or interact with them or read about them. I wonder if it's maybe the feeling that I don't like. Maybe it's the feeling I'm trying to get rid of and not the person. Uh-oh. Now the work is internal again. Now it's meditation again. Ooh, maybe the Buddha was right. That'd be weird. You have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Do not spend your time in vain. Put aside the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing sayings, and learn the backward step that turns your light inwardly to illuminate yourself. I'm doing Dogen again. I like to make fun of him for the first half, and then reify him again for the second half. It's part of the thing we have. It's a very complicated relationship, he and I. It's a big thing. But I'm reading that differently now because of Thich Nhat Hanh. I couldn't have gotten to that place with just Dogen's words. Directly indicate reality. Turn your light inward, see it. Yeah, of course, that's a correct teaching. That's perfect Dharma. That's great. And Thich Nhat Hanh is like, yeah, and when I do that, I see pirates, and I see broken economic systems, and I see systems of violence, and I see that they're all me. Gotcha. Thank you, Dogen. You did, in fact, point me in the right direction. I needed someone else's help to get there, but can you kind of feel how they're saying the same thing? One's just a little more abstract, and one's like, no, I'm going to bring you all the way over to the river and put your head down in the water, you stubborn Busho. Otherwise, you will not see it. you're going to keep denying that you're a pirate until you see this. And he will go unseen, and his hell will go unredeemed, and his pain will go unfelt, and he will keep doing it. If you don't love him, no one will. And that's your job. Oof. Thank you, Thich Nhat Hanh. I understand. That's what I needed. I needed to be brought all the way over to it. Very kindly, but can you feel the firmness in his teaching? That's firm teaching. It doesn't give us any room to wiggle. It really doesn't. So, to study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to study the way. There is no way outside of the self. There is no Buddhism outside of the self. In the light of our teaching of shunyata, or emptiness, in this tradition, to study the self is to study all things, the whole world, all of creation, all of time and space, and we go in order to go out. To illuminate the self is to illuminate everything. That's why it's to forget the self is to merge into all things illuminated. Those are my words. I'm bringing in Dogen that one last time because I really can understand the feeling that weaves all of Thich Nhat Hanh's words together. That studying his ocean of tears is studying Buddhism, and studying his ocean of tears is studying my ocean of tears. That they aren't two things. It takes a great heart to do that, but that heart isn't his and not mine. It's the heart. Our heart. The heart. The non-separate heart. All of us. The mind. The body. The path. The way. The self. Yeah. I see what you did there. I see why people describe being drawn to his kindness. I never had a chance to meet him. He died several months ago, as most of us know. But I've met many people who have spent time with him. I hang out in Buddhist communities, and a lot of people spent time in Plum Village and had a chance to meet him and his sangha. And they always say the same thing, and they always talk about being drawn to him, just wanting to be in his presence. And so we have examples like this of people who are so fully self-responsible, so fully self-aware, so fully committed to seeing every dark corner that they become emblematic of our capacity to do that for ourselves. I can see why there's part of me that's so drawn to him, because some unconscious part of me imagines I have a dark corner that's irredeemable, and I'm scared to even know that it is there. But maybe if I went to him, maybe he would see it. Maybe he could be the person who could forgive my pirate. This is why we're drawn to people like this and teachings like this, right? We project it out until we can pull it back in. That's okay. That's beautiful to have somebody in a position of such spiritual authority to show up as just a humble person who says, yes, I am just like you. I have it too. I have it too. We're no different. I can own and love mine. You can own and love yours. We'll do it together. Take my hand. Call me by my true names because one of them is yours. And I'll call you by your true names because one of them is mine. I think we just crave to be witnessed that way, don't we? And if that's what Zazen is, a time to sit down and be the witness and the witnessed for 20 minutes, half an hour, that way, to meet that incredibly deep spiritual need that we all have, to just acknowledge it, to say yes to all of it, just in the kind light of our attention. No wonder Zazen's talked about in such overflowing, glowing terms. Think of its profound potential to heal the world. If I can put myself in the circle of understanding, forgiveness, awareness. Yeah, and to be the understanding and the forgiveness and the awareness. Wow. So I'm going to end by quoting this same idea from a couple other voices, because I think that's important to do. The great Hindu master, a lot of you know the word Kabir. Kabir is a great... there's that word again, master. Jeez Louise. I notice every time I say it, I say that I don't like it, and then I keep saying it. So I wonder what's going on with that. Does that seem weird to you guys? Anyway, it's Kabir, so yeah, okay, he wins. He is a master. Hindu master Kabir says, all know that the drop merges into the ocean, but few know that the ocean merges into the drop. We have very similar metaphors in our Buddhist tradition. All know that the drop merges into the ocean. I'm part of the whole. I'm part of all beings. But few know that the ocean merges into the drop. All beings are me. Whoops. Can you see that's what he did with that poem? Oh, they're all you. That's what your dream therapist told you. You all have a dream therapist now. All the characters, all the things in the dream, they're you. Remember the bear, the armor, your dad's house, the cards? All that's you. The ocean merges into the drop. The Christian master, Meister Eckhart. This time I'm excused for using the word master because Meister is German for master. I can't escape it. Meister Eckhart says it this way. Let go of the fear of nothingness and sink into blessing. It's actually the same teaching. The blessing is the sinking. Could you feel it in Thich Nhat Hanh's words? How he arrives at a place of blessing by going, I sink into our non-separateness. You bet I'll cry, and you bet I'll laugh, and you bet I'll dance, because the tears are mine, and the joy is mine, and the snake is me, and the frog is me, and I'm going to sink right into it, because I'm saying yes to all of it. Can you feel how he got to blessing? I mean, that's a different way of talking about it, but wow. I hope you feel blessed by your Zazen. I hope when the bell rings at the end of your sitting, you feel like you are the blesser and the blessed. I hope that happens every time you do it. I don't know what else you'd be doing it for. So enlightenment is huge beyond all possible measure. Enlightenment is being in kind relationship with everything. Wise, compassionate, clear, wise relationship with everything internally, so that we can be in wise relationship with the external world. Let us keep our vows together to embody compassion by becoming compassion, by becoming it to ourselves, all parts of us, directly with no gap. Then we can arrive where we never left, where we can hear all of our cries and our laughter at once, so that we can see that our joy and our pain are one, so that we can wake up. The doors of our hearts can be left open, the door of compassion. Thank you, Thich Nhat Hanh, and thank you. I'm done. And we have a few minutes. I know we've got a bunch of announcements we want to make sure we take time for this morning. But if folks have got thoughts they'd like to share, or if any of you have ever been to Plum Village and met Thich Nhat Hanh, I'd love to hear a story this morning. Please, Katie, what you got?
As you were describing the girl, I had this image of that war photo of the naked girl running from the bombing, and I thought how even more directly that was me creating that situation for that girl. And I think and we just had the anniversary of Hiroshima, and we need to acknowledge how much we were a part of.
Our karma is ancient to our soul, is it not? You guys know that phrase as part of our service here. All our ancient and twisted karma. We fully avow. That's what his poem is about, right? It's exactly what you just said, Katie. Yeah. Other folks have something they want to offer up today, or please, Diana.
I think that it's important to acknowledge both being the oppressor and the oppressed. They both live inside of us. They are us. But also find the compassion to turn that into action that can create beauty with the world and bring harmony and peace between oppressors and oppressed.
Yeah. Very, very true. Thich Nhat Hanh, of course, showed up on the radar of a lot of folks in this country in his capacity as a social activist back in the 60s. And one of the things that wasn't lost on me when I read the story of the poem that I read to all of you this morning was the implied order in which things happened in his heart. I hear about the thing, and I watch what it does to me, and then I meditate. And I get pretty clear about what's going on inside of me so that when it's time, because it's time to do the thing, I'm doing it from a place that isn't self and other, and isn't better, worse, and isn't victim, perpetrator. Or else, of course, I just become an instrument of that which I've just been hurt by, right? So how crucial that is. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Zoom people. Hi. Hey, Ginny. What's up?
Hi, Boucho. Can you hear me?
I can.
Thank you for your talk. I love this poem by Thich Nhat Hanh, and like you, I encountered it years ago, and I don't think I had quite the reaction that you did, but your talk this morning really opened it up for me. My question is along the lines of what Diana was just talking to, and I wonder how it is that we can practice this off the cushion, especially when we're not perfect at seeing our unity with the pirate yet.
Yeah, that's such a fair question, Jenny. Thank you. I don't know the answer. I don't say that glibly. I mean, because I just don't think there's an answer we can plug in. I know when I'm acting out of my reactivity, I'm going to hurt myself and I'm going to hurt others. I know that. That's easy to see. And I also know the other extreme of I will take action when I am perfected. That's a trap. Good luck. No, this is a thing that's worth doing. You should be willing to suck at it for a long time. Right? You should be, you know what I mean. Like, yeah, you want to learn to juggle, you're going to drop an awful lot of beanbags for a long time. That's the deal. And so do it imperfectly and learn and do it imperfectly and learn and do it imperfectly and learn. Yeah. What I appreciate, though, or what I'm borrowing, Ginny, from the heart of your question is because of the community in which we're talking about this morning, we don't have a lot of resistance putting primacy of importance on self-reflection, self-awareness, to get very, very good at recognizing what violence feels like inside of ourselves and being able to recognize that. And instead of seeing it as an enemy that needs to be suppressed, repressed, denied, broken off, judged, condemned, right? And so I go, oh, there's my suffering. There's my suffering that's showing up. That's job number one. Has to be. Has to be job number one. If I'm not relating to that directly, then I'm acting from that. I've got to be careful. I'm not talking about vigilance. I'm not talking about freaking out. I'm not talking about every time I want to say, can you please pass the beans? I've got to spend 45 minutes in Zazen making sure that my bean request is purged of all possible violence. That's not what I'm talking about. We are in an interactive universe, and we are interacting whether we like it or not. But I love Jenny's question because without even saying it, she is already, and quite correctly, blurring the lines between what we consider activism and what we don't consider activism. Because the closer we get to that, we realize, oh, there's not quite a line there that I thought. Because my body wasn't moving, was I active? Maybe somebody in this room can tell me whether or not Zazen is active or passive. Uh-huh. In all seriousness, when you sit down on your cushion, is that activism? Are you sitting on behalf of all beings? Are you meeting the one suffering that you can directly feel with kindness and understanding? Does that change everything? Is that enough? Is there an enough? What would enough look like? You tried, but you didn't stop the war. Is that enough? Did you not do enough? These are great questions. You'll notice I'm not answering any of them. But you can feel the parts of us that want to do more, and that how part of that impulse is beautiful, born of a direct experience of my suffering is yours and your suffering is mine. It's a crying baby that I'm moving toward before I even think about it. You can feel how clean that is. And you can also feel, probably, if you're like me, that part of that impulse is very, very restless and very, very unhappy and very, very anguished. And it has a very particular idea about how something is supposed to go. And I can feel the violence in that, no matter how convinced I am of my righteousness, how dangerous I've just become. Thank you, Jenny. We could talk about this all day. This is obviously a big thing, and Buddhists have been asking this question for 2,500 years. Yeah. Judy, do you have something there too? You've got your little cartoon paw up. I can't hear you, but I can see you. I still can't hear you. I can see you, but I can't hear you. Oh, and now you've disappeared. Oh, and now you're down there. Hi, Judy. I'm sorry that your cartoon paw disappeared and, okay. She's smiling and doing the gesture. I'm glad you're here. All right. I know we're running short on time, and I know we've got a lot to cover. Thank you, folks. I appreciate you going along for the ride today. I hope you have a beautiful, beautiful Sunday. Thank you.